You are listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Today we're in Bergerac.
Hello, I'm Richard Moore. I'm with Daniel Freib.
Hiya.
Lionel Burney.
Evening, Richard.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are standing on the, not quite the touchline, but we're at the Ville de Bergerac, US Bergerac Rugby Club Stadium. Quite a nice little stadium, a bit like a non-league football ground back in England. Pitch looking in magnificent condition, actually. Don't know much about...
Well, it has a lot of rain today.
It has had a lot of rain today, yeah. Don't know much about US Bergerac, whether they're any good at rugby, but nice little ground, clubhouse. Richard and I have missed out on the buffet and the free wine, unfortunately, today. Mm. But it's been one of those days, really.
So we left the mountains, finally, and headed north to Bergerac, as Lionel said. And it was a first stage win for Garmin-Sharp. And before we discuss that, let's flag up an amazing competition prize that we're offering tonight. We're not going to give you the question now, so there's an incentive to listen to the end, but the prize is two VIP tickets for the finish of the Tour de France in Paris on Sunday and a hotel room, twin room, I believe. This is courtesy of our friends at Sharp. We'll be giving you a question at the end of the podcast. It'll be first correct answer wins.
Yeah, you'll have to move quickly to enter that competition. We'll announce
and then to Paris.
And then we'll announce the winner as quickly as we possibly can on Saturday, and you'll have to make your way to Paris. I assume that is the travel included in the prize?
Sadly, it's not included in the prize. So, it will certainly suit someone who's maybe already in Paris or can get to Paris very easily. It's very easily accessible from all over Europe, of course.
I mean, that would be even without the travel included, it's a wonderful prize, chance to see everything unfold on the Champs-Élysées on Sunday. Brilliant.
Yeah, the VIP tickets, I think, get you into an enclosure close to the Place de la Concorde, I believe. The only slight hitch is you'll have to make small talk with Jasper Credland of Sharp Europe, who has very kindly donated the prize, and I'm sure he'll want to say hello at some point. But that's always a pleasant experience, isn't it?
He's a very nice chap, and you'll be segregated from the likes of us, the media. We won't be allowed to get into that VIP bit, so it's actually a really nice, worthwhile prize.
Come and look down at us.
The Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Subscribe on iTunes, listen on Audioboo, and visit us at thecyclingpodcast.com.
So today's stage, Ramūnas Navardauskas, the first ever Lithuanian stage winner at the Tour de France. And it was a tremendous win. He was a late replacement for David Miller, just got the nod for the Tour 5 days before it started. And once again, a well-executed plan by Garmin-Sharp.
Well, yeah, and it was a plan. I mean, I spoke to Charlie Wigelius, the Garmin-Sharp sports director, afterwards, and we'll hear from him in a little bit. But Garmin, one of, I think, 14 teams this morning.
Garmin-Sharp. Line.
Garmin-Sharp, one of 14 teams this morning who hadn't had a Tour stage win. So this really is the last proper chance for the stage hunters, because the time trial will more than likely go to somebody like Tony Martin, who's already won a stage. And Sunday's stage on the Champs-Élysées, although Peter Sagan might have a chance for Cannondale, it may well go to somebody who's already won a stage. So today's the last realistic chance. And there was a lot of activity around the Garmin-Sharp bus because they had a lot of VIPs there this morning, 30 or 40 people from their current sponsors, potential sponsors, friends of the team, and there was a lot of sort of nervous energy around. And the only other thing I kind of noticed was that three or four of the riders were wearing the hard shell helmets, the more aerodynamic helmets. I know we made that comment about Jack Bauer, which Daniel mildly poo-pooed, that Jack Bauer might have won the stage had he been wearing...
I thought it was me that poo-pooed it.
Well, one of you, I forget who poo-pooed it. But it's one of those sort of complete unknowables, isn't it? But it was noticeable that they came out wearing the more aerodynamic helmets today, which gave a clue that they might be up to something. And Charlie Wigelius explained that Ramūnas Navardauskas was their designated man, and that Tom Hjelte-Slagter was, his role in getting in that break was, was predetermined. Need to try not to get run over here by... They're taking the remains of the buffet away. We missed it. Yeah, it was predetermined, and Navardauskas was their protected rider, and he does an awful lot of the legwork in the team, dropping back for bottles and capes and stuff on wet days like today. And they had to you know, they had to basically stop him from doing that. He wanted to go back in the early part of the stage and do his normal work, and they were like, well, no, you're the protected rider for the end. So that gives an indication of what sort of selfless kind of guy he is.
I don't think that, I mean, when these plans come off, every team will start the stage with a plan, and when these plans come off, as they rarely do, there's obviously an awful lot of praise and credit. I don't know how specific it was in terms of the actual tactics. I mean,
very specific.
Well, that's not what I heard from Tommy Eltaslachter, who apparently, when he was away, he broke away from the breakaway. He got away on his own, and he was on the climb on his own, and he turned around and saw a rider approaching him and thought, oh no. I only realised quite late on that it was Navardauskas. So I think after the fact, teams will give you will say that it went entirely according to plan. It rarely does, really.
Well, should we listen to Charlie, and he can put his spin on it, if you like. This is Charlie Wagelius, the Garmin Sharp sports director.
The final was always going to be on Ramona, so the team was focused on that meet. We didn't know how the sprinters teams were going to react, and we hoped to have a bigger breakaway with Tommy Elter, and at one stage there was 12 riders going across to him, and that would have also been good, but I think, you know, the team did the best they could with the scenario, and they really deserve what they got. It's hopefully a step to him realising finally just how strong he is, because I think, you know, it's going to be a problem for the peloton when he really starts to understand just how strong he is.
Was it planned this morning then that Romanus would be the man for the final on the stage? Was that part of the team briefing?
Yeah, the focus was going to be on Ramunas for the final climb, with Sebastian Langeveld and Sumi, you know, and Jack being, you know, the really well, you know, the best quoted riders to be able to help him there. We were hoping for a bigger break to go away earlier in the race, and, you know, 12 riders almost made it to Tom Yelter's group, and that would have also been a good scenario, but we also knew that there was a big chance that the sprinters teams would ride for the final, and that's where our best chances lay with Ramunas.
With so many teams without a stage win, how satisfying is it to actually pull off something that you plan like that?
Yeah, it's sweet. And I think if you look at our season as a team, we got kicked in the face enough times, and for the things to finally turn in our way, I think it's really the just reward for the whole team.
And what about Ramonis? I mean, he's obviously a very, very strong rider. Sometimes a little bit too strong for his own good, perhaps.
No, I think his strength is a good thing. He's just a little bit too kind. And we have to argue with him always when he's always coming first. First guy to get rain jackets and beat-ons, and even on a day when we ask him to do the races, he's doing all the jobs for everybody else, so it's a bit of a battle with him, but hopefully he'll get a bit more selfish now.
So you had to persuade him not to drop back to come and get rain jackets and bottles, because he's the protected guy.
We constantly have to remind him to send somebody else or do something else, but that's just the way he is. He's just a kind person.
And on the run-in, what was the emotion like in the car? I mean, at what moment did he know he had it?
It was intense, to say the least. I'm glad there wasn't a camera in the car. I knew it when he crossed the line. I mean, there's been so many times this year that the luck didn't go our way, that I was waiting for some painted mark on the road to slip him up, or a banana skin or something. And
in a way, did the crash in the final kind of play into his hands a little bit? I mean, you make your own luck in cycling, though, don't you?
Yeah, he makes his own luck, and I think the teams who were riding on the front before the crash were riding on the front afterwards, so I don't think anybody can say that he didn't win it fair and square.
The Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar, with Richard Moore, Lionel Burney and Daniel Freib.
So that was Charlie Wagelius. Now, Daniel, what can you tell us about Navardauskas?
Well, the first thing I was going to say was I actually used to live in this area and used to go up the Mont Basiac where he attacked quite regularly. So he's very lucky that I wasn't in the field today, because it was, you know, it's my kind of climb. I could have been a real threat on that sort of terrain. But Navardauskas is a very powerful rider. I think he's one of those riders who struggles to sort of take the initiative himself, and is a bit too selfless maybe. I think I've said this on the podcast before, they've sort of torn their hair out at Garmin about why he has no affinity for the classics whatsoever, isn't really not interested in becoming a classics rider, but he has every physical attribute that you would want from someone, you know, perhaps more the Ardennes than the Cobble classics, but perhaps both. Yeah, he started the race in very good form. I think he was third, was he, to our surprise in Harrogate? Second or third? And he's obviously finishing...
Second? Was he second?
I think he was second.
Yeah, and he's not a sprinter. And is finishing the race in extremely good form. I mean, he's someone who had a very good reputation as an amateur in France. He rode for VC La Pomme, I think.
He did. He was asked a lot of questions about that, actually, afterwards.
But he didn't speak French. Well, he didn't want to speak French, which was quite odd. I think he won the under-23 Liège-Bastogne-Liège as an amateur. So he was very sought after, and Jonathan Vorters keeps a very close eye. The Jonathan Vorters, the Garmin shop manager, keeps a very close eye, certainly on the French amateur scene, or the amateur scene all over Europe. But Navadauskas was someone that he latched onto very quickly.
Tell us a bit about that climb then, Daniel, because Charlie Wegelius, well, you've ridden it several times in the past. Charlie Wegelius was saying the reason they liked Navadauskas' chances on it was because after the top there's a kind of false flat, there's no real descent, so he's very powerful. So that's a place where he was able to maximise on the advantage he'd eked out.
All I can remember about it is there's quite a good restaurant called La Grappe d'Or halfway up it. And then when you get to the top, on that false flat, just on your right, there's the Chateau de Montbazillac where you can buy very nice wine. And then on the way down, you go past a lot of other vineyards and cooperatives where you can buy slightly cheaper Montbazillac wine. And that is about all I can remember. I mean, I think it's about 1.7 kilometres, about 7 or 8%. Not too difficult. But
These are all the essential things that I need to know, really.
Yeah, that was an answer tailored for Lionel there. VC La Pomme, that was Dan Martin's club as well, wasn't
it? Yeah, Nicholas Roach as well, yeah.
A lot of riders come through that club from the Marseille area.
Yeah.
Now, Garmin Sharp, I put this out on Twitter earlier. It struck me in the aftermath of the stage win that it doesn't really matter who wins. When a Garmin Sharp rider wins, there is an outpouring of love on Twitter. And you don't really see that with any other team, I don't think. There is this emotional connection that people do seem to have with this team. Why is it? I mean, there are various theories as to why, and it's probably a combination of things.
I think they've carved out this niche as a kind of as a bit of an underdog, and that they, you know,
I got a lot of answers from people. I mean, people said that it's their stance against doping. That was their sort of raison d'être when they set up. There have been a few sort of hiccups along the way in presenting themselves as this clean team in terms of, you know, history coming back to haunt them. Also, just the way they race, you know, the especially the last couple of years, the tactical approach, the aggressive, attacking sort of riding that they tend to go in for. The personalities on the team, I suppose. Jonathan Vorters, the fact that he engages with people on social media, he's a very accessible team boss.
I think also their fortunes are up and down like a seesaw or a yo-yo. I mean, they are... they're sometimes plagued by terrible misfortune, and you often see riders from their team suffering on, struggling on. We've seen David Miller suffer through the entire, was it 2010 Tour de France, I think. You know, things like that don't go unnoticed. I mean, even Talansky in this tour, you know, on the verge of abandoning and then getting back on his bike and then pulling out the next day. You know, things like that do resonate, I think, with spectators.
What's interesting is it's not just fans, it's also journalists. A lot of journalists, particularly maybe US ones, but there's a connection there.
I mean, they'll probably be described as plucky underdogs, but they're more like preppy underdogs. A lot of them are quite sort of well educated and can speak very well and certainly very media savvy, and I think journalists probably appreciate that, right?
Yeah, there's always a nice feeling around their bus, isn't there? They are one of the more open teams in terms of being happy to mix with the media in the mornings and talk, and I think that does go a long way in the end.
It does, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You could contrast them with Team Sky, as a few people did, in all these areas, really. You know, budget as well as a consideration. They're known not to have one of the biggest budgets in the sport. And you look at Dave Brailsford and Jonathan Vorters, actually have a lot in common, I think. But Vorters is very, very active on Twitter and social media and engages with people a lot, and Brailsford doesn't at all. And it's just an interesting, whether a lot of people did mention the engagement with Vauters, who is the figurehead of the team, and maybe that has been a significant factor.
Yeah, and they're quirky as well, aren't they? Sky are very much the kind of they'd have a more corporate type appearance, the black and the blue line, and Garmin-Sharp with the Argyle pattern on their jersey. It's slightly affected, isn't it? It's like somebody who wears a sort of wacky hat, but it does seem to appeal to people.
Yeah, one thing Sky definitely not is kind of geek chic, or they've never embraced anything like that. And the burrito parties spring to mind from Garmin Sharp's rest days. They invite the press for a burrito party. I don't think. Yeah, what would you get at Team Sky?
You get an update of
distilled water, probably.
distilled water and Microsoft Excel
and some a probiotic yogurt.
A bit harsh, perhaps, but I'd quite like all of those three things.
Let's, on the subject of Sky, let's drift away from today's stage of the tour. We'll return to that in a moment and also look ahead to the time trial and also give you our competition question. But at the Sky bus this morning, the subject was, once again, Bradley Wiggins. He's been talked about a lot for someone who's not actually riding the tour, but he said at the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow that he probably wouldn't ride the tour again, that he probably wouldn't ride a grand tour again, and he saw the rest of his career being all about the track and the team pursuit at the Rio Olympics in 2016. So I spoke to Dave Brailsford at the Sky bus this morning about those latest comments. Bradley Wiggins, he has said that he's probably not going to ride another grand tour and that it'll be about the track for him. Have you had that conversation with him? Or?
No.
Will you have that conversation with him?
Yes.
Now he's out of contract at the end of the year. Is there a chance he'll stay at Team Sky next year?
Well, we're talking to Bradley and his management team, and ideally we'd like to find a solution to support him through to Rio, and exactly what that would look like. I don't think it'd be a normal, straightforward road contract, so I think it'd be more of creative in terms of what would help him get to where he needs to be for Rio, but we'd certainly like to get behind him and support him with that.
It sounds like that you're on side then with this idea that the track will be his priority for the rest of his career.
Well, certainly I think he's made it quite clear, hasn't he, himself, that he'd like to finish in Rio. If you want to get there and get to the level required, I think, you know, they saw yesterday that they've got some good foundations, but they've got some work to do as well. And in order to get to that level of performance, then you're going to have to focus on it, you know, a bit like we know that Geraint and Pete Kennett did in London, you know. It takes a dedicated, you know, season and a half, really, to really give it a crack.
Would you be sorry to not see Bradley in another Grand Tour? I mean, do you think he's got another Grand Tour in him?
I think that's down to him, really. I think the physically he has, I'm sure, but you've got to. It's hard work to get ready for a Grand Tour, and if you're focused on trying to develop team pursuit specific ability, you know, maybe you'd go more towards, you know, prologues, time trials, and that type of effort. But you're going to need the background work anyway. But I think very much down to Brad, really. I think if he can make the sacrifices of going to altitude, the weight control, all the other things that he needs to do in order to be able to ride a grand tour, then I think only he can answer that.
You're listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.
So we heard there from Dave Brailsford responding to Bradley Wiggins' latest comments. And Lionel, you were making the point that, you know, when was the last time a rider perhaps ended his Tour de France career on the Champs-Élysées in the yellow jersey? Lance Armstrong almost did it, but I don't know if we include that anyway. But then he came back again, of course. And it's that's a very unusual sort of outcome to his career. And, you know, he said he wants to do the team pursuit. I think he's been very hurt this year by non-selection for the Tour and by his general sort of increasingly marginal status at Team Sky. Although I've heard sort of whispers and rumours about just how willing or otherwise he was to buy into the preparation for the Tour, even just to be a member of the team. Altitude training camps in Tenerife were obviously a staple of his preparation in 2012. Apparently it was his decision not to go to Tenerife for altitude training this year, that he preferred to stay with his family. And, you know, that's something that all the other riders in the Tour team and others too committed to.
Well, yeah, of course. And, you know, Wiggins, he's made these grand statements. I mean, I remember 2009 when he finished fourth in the Tour de France, just missing out on the podium. And he made the big statement, you'll probably not see me on a track again. And now he's back on the track. saying you'll probably not see me in a Grand Tour again.
In 2007, of course, he said you'll not see me at the Tour again.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. That after he'd gone home once Cofidis had all pulled out. Yeah. So sometimes, I think, Daniel, you made the point, how seriously should we take this comment from Bradley Wiggins with a pinch of salt, you know, perhaps. But you can't really see him coming back to the Tour or being in any Grand Tour as a contender, having missed 2 years in a row. But his track future's equally uncertain, really. I don't think it's a given that he's coming back into a team pursuit squad that's going to rock up at Rio and win a medal. Their performance in the Commonwealth Games, not particularly impressive. The time just, light years away from what the Australians were producing. I know it's not the Olympic Games. I know it's his first.
It's better.
it's obviously better than the Olympics. But it's one of those questions that would just go on and on. And in the end, it's up to Bradley Wiggins to decide what it is he wants to do. And if he's going to stay at Team Sky, I would have thought that a track focus for 2 years is probably just about all he would be able to... That would be the role he would be able to fulfil.
Just finally on this, you need to be... Increasingly, you need to be really, really fast to do a good team pursuit. And Wiggins is more of an endurance athlete, always has been. And I remember Tim Kersten saying that when he was training him, he assumed he would have a higher sort of top-end speed, and he doesn't. He's actually somebody who probably should have always been a road endurance rider. He became a great track rider because that's what he did, and as a youngster, that's what he did a lot of. So he was almost moulded into something that his physiology was perhaps not best suited for. And so at his age, he's not going to get faster. You tend to get slower. If anything, your endurance can decrease at a lower rate than your speed. So, yeah, it's going to be tough for him.
The Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Subscribe on iTunes, listen on Audioboo, and visit us at thecyclingpodcast.com.
Moving back to today's
proper
stage.
Cycling. Sorry.
Moving back to proper cycling, Daniel. Will we look ahead to tomorrow's time trial?
Let's go for it, yeah. Bring it on.
Bring it on. Well, it's a time trial. Is that proper cycling?
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, if it was completely flat, it wouldn't be. But tomorrow's, there are a few bumps, a few interesting bits in tomorrow's time trial.
Any nice wine shops en route? Chateau?
Oh, there'll be plenty tomorrow. It's quite a tasty route from that point of view.
Do you happen to know whether, I haven't looked closely enough at the route yet, do you happen to know if it's the same course as 1994 when Miguel Indurain absolutely monstered it? I think it must be, because there's only really one kind of route between Bergerac and Perico. We'll have to...
Not sure, Lionel. Sorry, not sure about that. We will check. We should have done our preparation, shouldn't we? We're all very busy writing, I assume. I hope you two were busy, because I was.
Well, I was busy. I wasn't writing. It's going to be a beautiful part of the country. We're in the Dordogne. It's going to look fantastic. Hopefully, the sun will shine. It'll be pretty grim if it's wet all day. I don't know exactly what the forecast is, but who's going to win?
I think Tony Martin might struggle on some of those, some of the sort of undulations we talked about. A lot of people have said Nibali is a favourite tomorrow. It will certainly suit him, the course. But, you know, I think most of us will be focusing on the battle for second, third and fourth between Perro, Pino and Valverde, 15 seconds between them. Not that much between them on paper, I don't think. Jean-Christophe Perrault has won the French Time Trial Championship in the past. But as everyone keeps saying at this stage of the Tour, it's perhaps specialisation counts less than freshness. And Perrault is really, although he's maintained his position, he's really well admitted himself that he's been on the limit at times in the Pyrenees. So I'm not sure. I had an interesting conversation this morning with Julien Jourdi, who's the AG2R director sportive, not really about Perrault's time trialing, but about how shambolically forgetful and disorganised he is. They choose his roommate not on the basis of who he gets on with best, but on who will remember his shoes in the morning, who will make sure he's got his passport. There was an incident last winter, told, where he went to a restaurant and left the restaurant and forgot his wife.
Easily done, Daniel. Come on, who hasn't done that?
Not me.
So who is going to be second and third on the podium then?
Well, it's a very good question. A Spanish journalist this morning I spoke to said that Valverde is, on paper, perhaps quite a strong time trial, Spanish time trial champion, and on a course like this you'd think he would do quite well, but he is really on his last legs. He's really tired, really exhausted. And you mentioned Tony Martin, just again, this is not a podium conversation, but it was very interesting to see him working today and in the Omega Pharma Quick Step train, setting up Mark Renshaw, who was produced a decent performance in the sprint. I think he was third or fourth on the stage. Degenkolb won the very reduced bunch sprint behind. But it's quite surprising in a way to see Tony Martin working in that group, given that, you know, he, as we've heard from some people on the race, has a tendency perhaps a day or two before time trials to really sort of take it easy. We've seen Cancellara do that as well, really treat it almost like as much as he can a rest day. So I don't know, maybe he's obviously been in great form at this tour. You'd expect him to be up there, but perhaps not at his very, very best tomorrow. As for the podium, I think I would love to see Pino finish second on the tour. I think it would be a great story. That's the best story, isn't it? I think if Perrault sort of pips Pino, for the podium, for the second place in the podium, it wouldn't have quite the same sort of emotional force as this story of the French Renaissance, as it being sort of Pino getting the runners up spot. But I don't know. I don't know. I think you've got mixed feelings about this. But as you said, Daniel, fourth would still be a fantastic result for Pino.
Yeah, I think if you're Thibaut Pinot, surely you want to finish as high as you possibly can. But I think, as I've made the point a few days ago, it might be slightly counterproductive if he were to finish second, because that will inevitably make people expect him to be up there challenging. And next year's Tour de France, you know, if all goes according to plan, we could be seeing Nibali, Alberto Contador, Chris Froome, Nairo Quintana. You know, there's other riders coming up. The battle for the podium next year will be, I would assume, more intense. Although, of course, you know, crashes and illness and everything we've seen in this tour, it really has been a war of attrition.
Well, I mean, it has. The phrase you've used, Daniel, decaffeinated tour. There's no getting away from that. And, you know, there's a chance here that Pino has to finish second in the Tour de France, and that might not be a chance that presents itself again. You know, it reminds me a little bit of, don't want to say it particularly because there are unfortunate connotations, but Bobby Julich in the 1998 Tour de France.
The whole top 10 that year, people like Axel Merckx, Giuseppe Di Grande, Jean-Cyril Robin, they never got close to a top 10 in the Grand Tour again.
I mean, obviously that was the EPO Tour, and Julich subsequently admitted that he'd use EPO, not making any comparisons, but there were a lot of sort of top riders who were missing for one reason or another from that race, and it did distort the final picture. What are your predictions, Daniel?
I don't know. I'm just thinking about another interesting subplot tomorrow will be the sort of technological battle. Pierre Roland, when he finished fourth in the Giro earlier this year, he made comments to the effect that the French teams might still be behind in terms of technology, in terms of development of bikes, and he said that time trialing now is basically akin to Formula One. And Movistar, a team who have really upped the ante in time trials over the last 2 years, they've had numerous riders that have come to their team and really improved quite drastically in time trials. You know, tomorrow will be a test for FDJ. They're doing a lot more work these days on sports science, and so are AG2R La Mondiale. I mean, they've credited that sort of those intensified efforts in sports science with some of their success this year. But yeah, tomorrow will give us some idea of how far they've come in that area, I think.
You're listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Tweet us at cycling_podcast.
Okay, you're listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar, and it's competition time. This is a competition kindly provided by Sharp, and it is to win two VIP tickets for the finish of the Tour de France in Paris on Sunday, and a hotel room Sunday night. So, that's for two people, by the way. So, the question is, name the riders who have worn the yellow jersey in this year's tour. Name the riders who have worn the yellow jersey in this year's tour.
Can we say how many there were? Or should we let people figure that out?
Let's keep it really challenging.
Okay. And how are people going to enter?
Well, you can't enter, Lionel, just so you know.
I do need a hotel room in Paris on Sunday night.
Tough. Please tweet at cycling_podcast. and hashtag sharp honey badger. Talk about shoehorning in the it was going to be hashtag honey badger, but then Jasper Credland of Sharp had the ingenious idea of inserting a sharp at the front of that. So it's very important you get that right or you'll not be eligible for the prize. Hashtag sharp honey badger.
Has Jasper previously used that name as his profile on a dating website? It sounds like he might have done.
Sharp honey badger.
Should just explain the honey badger is Ramonas Navadauskas' nickname.
We should have explained that, actually. Yeah, that is his nickname. Why is he called the honey badger?
I think it's just because he's tough, isn't it, and kind of fierce.
Not the first badger we've had at the Tour de France, of course. And I was reminded today, we were talking about this thing that we've been talking about a lot, about Tour de France winners crashing or not. And I think the last Tour winner to suffer a really bad crash en route to the to Paris was Bernardino in 1985, last French winner. But he crashed in Saint-Étienne, broke his nose, and then he got ill after that as well. But I think that we were talking to a couple of people this morning who thought that was maybe the last time that the Tour winner arrived in Paris with, you know, crash wounds. So anything else to wrap up today?
Well, while we're in competition mode, we ran a competition a few days ago to win a framed print of Simon Gill's photograph of the peloton making its way up the Côte de Buttertubs on the first day of the Tour in Yorkshire. If you were in Yorkshire, that would have made a very nice souvenir of your visit there. The winner of that is Mark Sinton Smith. That's his Twitter handle, Mark Sinton Smith. If he could get in touch with us, send us a direct message on Twitter and we will arrange for the framed picture to be sent to you. It's quite large, so I think it's 30 inches by 24 inches or something.
Nice. Now, you've still got your other competition as well, Lionel, the name your dream Tour de France team, and I think we're seeing Dave Brills for tomorrow to cast his eye over that.
Well, he's had a look through, but he hasn't picked a winner yet.
He did some interesting say, didn't he, about he did say that you know the impression you get from TV is different to being in the race itself in terms of which riders do what and do how much. He did mention some names, didn't he, as being particularly impressive, who you don't necessarily see.
He did, I did write them down. They're on a piece of paper in the press room.
Cheng Ji?
No, Cheng Ji. Oh, let's have a word for Cheng Ji. 5 hours 43 down overall. Probably going to be 6 hours tomorrow after the time trial.
I think he's going to win the time trial.
I think that may well be the biggest gap between first and second, first and last. Sorry, for a long, long time. I'm going to check that out. And
1903, I think.
My travelling companion Sam Dancy and I were imagining, because it was quite a technical finish today and very wet. There were 2 90-degree bends in the last kilometre. We were imagining I forget which Grand National was it, the Foinaven Grand National, was it 1964? When a rank outsider, I don't know, it was 500-1, 1,000-1 shot, ended up winning the Grand National because everyone else had fallen pretty much, I think Beaches Brook. But yeah, and we were imagining Cheng winning the Tour due to that huge crash that took out all 100 and however many riders are left in the race.
Well, if you imagine that the race was run slightly differently and they all set off from Yorkshire at the same time, but then were set off according to their overall time, you know, staggered, so that they basically riding around the France in real time. Basically, Cheng would still be in the Pyrenees.
Now, Cheng is 201 kilometres behind at the current average speed, apparently.
Well, he's going to finish, and that's first Chinese rider to ride and finish the Tour, which is quite an achievement. And here we are scoffing at that. We've just driven around France. Who do we think we are?
I'm not scoffing. I'm not scoffing at all.
I think it's some scoffing.
We'll do some scoffing later. Back to Dave Brailsford's. A couple of the riders that Dave Brailsford said he'd noticed were Valerio Agnoli and Van Notte of the Astana team, who...
Nibali's teammate. No, roommate, sorry.
Right, well, and they both were pretty prominent in helping Nibali win the Giro last year, weren't they?
Yeah, they pretty much his sort of most trusted, most loyal domestiques. They've been with him pretty much his whole career.
Right, well, we leave it there, fellas. We're here again, Bergerac, tomorrow for the time trial, and we'll be bringing you our penultimate Telegraph cycling podcast supported by Jaguar tomorrow evening, and then there'll be a final one on Sunday. Got a few little tricks up our sleeve for that one.
Well, you won't be here, will you? You'll have flown back to Glasgow for the Commonwealth Games.
That's the trick. but I will be present in some way, shape or form in the final podcast. So thank you again, everybody, who's been listening. And thanks to Jaguar, to The Telegraph and other John Mooney Paul Scoens for all their help over the 3 weeks, and Nigel Brown as well of Dirt and Glory Media. So thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
And thank you, Daniel.
Thank you both.
Podcast daily during the Tour de France. This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.